Blog Talk Radio.
Tweeted it, and then I said it right now. I'm getting southern, man. A lot of ups and downs. More downs, I think, if I had to basically sum up what the show is going to be. So we have an unprecedented sleazy trick from the Republicans being pulled in the Senate. They're basically trying to get rid of every single aspect of Dodd-Frank. Stay classy. They've already gotten rid of most of it. By attaching things to bills when they shouldn't be there. Now they're trying to go all the way. Of course, there was another shooting slash terror attack. I'll let you guys decide what you want to refer to it as. I'll give you all the information on it later. We have that to discuss. We have Jeb Bush letting his elitist colors show again without even realizing it. He basically called for getting rid of Medicare. Good move, man. It's not like Medicare is popular or anything. And what else I got for you? Couple different Ted Cruz stories today. Aren't you lucky? No Donald Trump today. No Donald Trump, so you can rejoice at that as well. And the character assassination of Sandra Bland has begun. It has begun, and we'll discuss that. So let's get started here, and I'm going to kick it off with the incredibly sleazy trick the Republicans are doing. We'll get to the beginning of next segment. Will be, I'm sorry, the next like 30-minute block, I should say, will be the terrorist attack slash shooting. Again, you're going to have to determine what to call it because it could be both actually, or it's weird. You have to figure out exactly what the motivation was for it, and it gets murky. But anyway, let's get started here. The Republicans pulled an unprecedented sleazy trick in the Senate this week. Apparently, they're eager to get us back into a recession, so they're trying to take away the few protections that were put in place to re-regulate Wall Street after the crash. Huffington Post reports on this. They say, the Senate Appropriations Committee voted Thursday to pass a $20.6 billion spending bill that would decimate President Barack Obama's signature Wall Street reform law. Senator Richard Shelby, who's a Republican of Alabama, offered an entire bill as an amendment. His legislation takes direct aim at the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform law. It would dramatically restrict the government's ability to regulate big banks by easing regulations for dozens of mid-sized lenders and beefing up oversight of the Federal Reserve. It also rolls back key consumer protections. So get this. It's a 236-page amendment attached to a 184-page bill. So the amendment to the bill is bigger than the bill itself. And I love the Orwellian name they gave it. They called it the Financial Regulatory Improvement Act. It does the opposite. They call it Financial Regulatory Improvement Act. What it does is it takes away the few remaining aspects of Dodd-Frank that are there. And they also do another classic Republican trick. They say, oh no, we're doing this because we want to help the smaller sized banks. That's why we're doing this, silly. The same thing when they pass tax cuts for billionaires and corporations. What do they say? We're doing a middle class tax cut package. Now, in reality, they don't. They're not doing that. The tax cuts will be specifically targeted at billionaires and corporations, but they say, hey, it's a middle-class tax cut, so that everybody rolls over, and they go, oh, yeah, I guess we got to vote for it. Well, it's the same thing here. We're just trying to get burdensome regulations off the smaller banks. That's why we're doing this. We care about the little guy. Again, that's not true. What they're doing is they're gutting the few remaining aspects of Dodd-Frank, which was weak to begin with, and which they've already been assaulting from day one. So this is the new sleazy trick that they do. For the longest time, they would add little amendments to bills, which take away one provision of Dodd-Frank or another provision of Dodd-Frank, and they put it in bills that have nothing to do with it. It could be a bill for infrastructure repair, and they just slip it in there, and they say, well, look, I mean, if you guys want to fix infrastructure, this is how you get my vote, is you have to get rid of financial protection and financial reform, and we'll get into another great recession, and we'll pretend like we don't know how it happened. But just do it. Allow my nonsense in there along with your bill. And then now they've graduated to not just putting, like, little provisions in a bill. Now they're like, fuck it. Just put an entire bill as an amendment on a different bill. And usually they do it where it's a must-pass situation, where it's like you got a little, very little time remaining. It's something that needs to be re-upped. And then they're like, ah, slip it in at the last second. And then, you know, Democrats are caught off guard, and some of them will buckle anyway, and they'll end up voting for it. Now, thankfully, the White House has come out and said, no, we're going to veto it. If you really try to do stuff like, you know, stuff this brazen, we're going to veto it. Unfortunately, it was only Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, who came out and said that, which means I don't know if they're actually going to do it, because Jack Lew said, I will implore the president to veto it, or something to that effect. Nah, it's not strong enough for me, man. Because remember, they did this also, they did another sleazy deregulatory trick around Christmas time, right before the break, and President Obama signed it. So all he had to do was veto it in order to, you know, fix the scenario, and then you come back later and you deal with it whenever. He signed it. So will he do it here? He might do it here, because you have to understand he already got the praise for passing Dodd-Frank in the first place. And our media is so shitty that they're not going to call this out. So he's already gotten the praise of historic financial reform. Since he's gotten the praise, now they're dismantling it piece by piece. He's not getting the blame when they dismantle it piece by piece. So he's like, hey, I get to please everybody. I get to please my donors, my corporate donors, my Wall Street donors who helped me out to get elected. And also, I already got the praise as if what I did was, you know, akin to the New Deal, or as if what I did was like Glass-Steagall. Well, it wasn't. It's not that. It was weak reform to begin with, and now they're launching an all-out assault on it. And understand, mark my words, there will, at some point, be another crash. And that crash can come from many different areas. It can come from the student loan debt crisis. It can come from derivatives. It can come from reinflating the housing bubble, as we know they did, which is what we're talking about here, and they're trying to get rid of whatever regulations are left. So when we do have the next crash, it's not going to be because the government was too left-wing and regulated Wall Street too efficiently. It's going to be because they didn't do it enough. It's going to be because it was a sham. It's going to be because it was change in name, but they kept the exact same system in place in terms of how it really functions. So when it crashes again, just know this is what you're blaming. This is what's going to be directly responsible for it. You're getting rid of the few protections that we put back in place, and they're all going to act like, oh, what do you mean? Nobody could have saw this coming. CNBC, the fucking financial network, the business network, that claim they know everything about everything when it comes to money. They were blindsided. Oh, my God, I can't believe we had a crash. That's crazy. Well, I predicted the market was going to go up forever. They're going to say the same fucking thing when the next crash happens. Who could have saw this coming? I mean, we thought everything was going so great. I did. I fucking saw it coming. I saw it coming because I actually read what Congress is doing. And when you see what Congress is doing, it's easy to connect the dots. These are the same kind of actions that led to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. It was the repeal of Glass-Steagall. It was chipping away at the regulations that FDR put in place and chipping away at the New Deal and Reagan coming in there and doing trickle-down economics and cutting taxes for the rich and deregulating more. All of this stuff led to the crash. You played dumb the last time. Oh, fucking happened. I don't understand. And they're doing the same thing now, and you're going to play dumb again. So you're never going to learn from your mistakes. Okay. Next, Jeb Bush. Oh, boy. So here we go again with Jeb Bush. He let his elitist colors show, and he didn't even realize it. So on Wednesday, he was discussing Medicare, and he said the following, quote, "We need to make sure we fulfill the commitment to people that have already received the benefits, that are receiving the benefits, but we need to figure out a way to phase out this program for others and move to a new system that allows them to have something, because they're not going to have anything." So then he went on to praise Paul Ryan for proposing his voucher bill, or in other words, the privatization of Medicare. And he said, a plan like that makes sense. I would support a policy like that. Now, I need the Democrats, pay attention. Wake up, guys. Let's go here. Up and at them. I need you to pay attention here. Keep this in mind, that Jeb Bush, we have the evidence, we have the quotes. He said, yeah, let's do a Ryan-type plan. So let's do a privatization-type plan. We need to phase out Medicare as it exists right now. Because if he makes it to the general election, he will say that he never said that. He's going to say it because every other Republican has said it. It's the standard thing that they all do. They'll talk about when they're talking to, and by the way, he was talking to a room full of rich people here. So when they're talking to a room full of Wall Street people, a room full of rich people, sometimes in the primary process, they'll say, you know, we need to phase out Medicare because it's unsustainable. But then by the time they get to the general, because they know they have to run more to the middle and the overwhelming majority of the country is on the side of keeping those programs as they are, then they say, I never said that I wanted to privatize it. I said we needed to reform it. That's the sidestep that they'll do come the general election. And again, we know because that's exactly what happened in the last election, that's exactly what happened with McCain. It's been happening time and time. Even if you go back as far as fucking Reagan and all the Republicans they mean cut the program. Sometimes they mean just get rid of it, like Jeb Bush is saying. But then they'll pivot to, no, I mean reform. I want you to get your benefits. I just want you to get it a different way, a.k.a. give all the money to my Wall Street buddies so they can make a profit. Remember, George W. Bush proposed privatizing Medicare in 2004. If we implemented his plan, everybody who's over the age of 65 would be poor right now. You want to know why? Because let's say we privatized Medicare, which is guaranteed, an earned benefit program. You privatize that. What happened, I don't know, 4 years after 2004? The subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. Everybody would have lost their money. Everybody would have been wiped the fuck out. You can't have that, man. You can't have that. That's why, you know, an earned benefit program makes sense. It's a social insurance program. But they're against that because they want to give the money to their donors. So Democrats, remember this. It's going to come in handy later, if/when you have to face him in a general election. Call him out on the fact that he wanted to privatize it. Now, what's the reality about Medicare? Because their main argument, when they're being honest with you, is always, well, it's unsustainable. So that's the reason why we want to get off it. We're doing it out of necessity. We're not doing it because we want to do it and because our donors want us to do it. It's out of necessity. Now, that point is untrue because Medicare is solvent until 2030. And then after that, it pays out 87% of its benefits. So oftentimes you'll hear people on the right say, it's going bankrupt. It's going bankrupt. And they'll just leave it at that. They won't give you any. Really, when? They won't tell you a year. They won't tell you the details of it. So I'm telling you the details right now. Until 2030, it pays out 100% of its benefits. It's solvent. And then after that, it pays out 87% of its costs. And by the way, every time they come back to do an analysis of it, they find that it's solvent for longer than they originally thought. So the last time they did analysis on this, they said Medicare is solvent until 2024, and then it'll pay out 87% of its benefits. Then they just came around and did another analysis of it, and they found out, oh, look at that, it's solvent until 2030. So every time they check it, it's like, okay, no, we still have many years left of solvency. And then you don't go bankrupt, you pay out 87% of the benefits. So little tweaks can fix the program, but they want to scrap the program because they want to help out their donors. And finally, the most important part, which is why I'm screaming at the Democrats to remember this, is 50% of the American people say do not cut Medicare under any circumstance. Any circumstance. That's such an important fact to remember. You're going to win on this issue. You just have to hammer this issue home, and you can't let them squirm away when they try to bullshit you and say, I never said cut, I said reform, blah, 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 blah. Quote him. I have the quote right here. You take the fucking quote. You run with it. You say this back to his face. You can crush Republicans. See, that's the thing. Democrats don't realize your positions are actually more popular. So if you run an election campaign effectively, you can't lose. You hammer them with their dumb ideas and the shit that they want that virtually none of the American people want. And you think I'm kidding about that? How you like this? 70% of Tea Party supporters even say, don't cut it. Don't cut Medicare. So while these guys may be in favor of some other crazy policies that you and I might not agree with, they have a sacred cow too. That sacred cow is not only Medicare, it's also Social Security and education spending. Even the far right says, you could leave those. The only people who want to cut those are the Wall Street class, the corporatists, and the elitists. People like Jeb Bush. So Democrats, pounce! This is coming from the same guy who just said the American people should work more hours. That's what he said. He's like, to compete globally, we need to work more hours. That's your solution for the fucking economy? Work more hours. That's your solution. We already work way more hours than most of the industrialized world. I showed you guys the numbers on that the other day. Your solution is work more. Not, hey, we need to link wages with productivity because then everybody gets a raise. No, he still wants to underpay you, but he wants you to work more hours. So he wants you to work more hours, get paid less, and he wants to cut your benefits. Why would anybody vote for Jeb Bush? Nobody should vote for Jeb Bush, even if you're a principled conservative. Okay. Next. We are going to go to Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders, and then, like I said, after the first break, we'll come back and I'll get into the unfortunate shooting / terror attack yesterday. There's a reason why I keep, trying to explain how that's I'm saying both of those. There's a reason why I'm on the fence on that. But anyway. All right, Ted Cruz time. So Ted Cruz praised Bernie Sanders on Chris Matthews' show. And Chris Matthews is actually going to do a decent job here pointing out why Ted Cruz is doing it. And he does it to his face, like he explains his theory to his face. But let's listen to it, and then we'll come back and I'll explain what I think is the real motivation here.
The Democrats, virtually all of them, are supporting this cronyism and corporate welfare. The one person who's standing up strong is Bernie Sanders. This is an issue where Bernie and I are in complete agreement. We need to end this corporate welfare, but far too many Democrats, and I will readily admit, far too many Republicans are supporting hundreds of billions of dollars of loan guarantees to giant corporations at the expense of the taxpayers. I think people are fed up with that. They want someone who will stand with the working man and woman against the bipartisan corruption of Washington.
Is that a strategy on the right to build up Bernie Sanders?
Well, I've said for a long time, I like and respect Bernie Sanders.
Well, yeah, but you're
honest,
building him up. You just
candid.
Said it. You took an opportunity for a call out there to build him. What is the strategy to build up Bernie Sanders from the right-wing perspective?
I respect honesty in politics.
Okay.
Bernie admits he's a socialist. We can have an honest debate.
Well, he is a socialist.
About
just admit it. You admit you're a Tea Party guy. It's a fact.
But the difference is I think there are an awful lot of Democrats in the United States Senate whose policies are every bit as liberal or every bit as socialist as Bernie,
but
they don't admit it. I'm enjoying watching Hillary Clinton explain to the voters how she's just as much of a socialist as Bernie Sanders. I'd rather an honest
debate. Well, that would
debate.
Be a mistake, and you know that would be a mistake, and that's why you're saying it. If she goes out there and matches Bernie and lets him lead her around, she'll end up looking and sounding like him, which will take her from the center.
See, Chris Matthews is pretty much on point with his theory there that he's laying out to Ted Cruz's face, but I disagree with him slightly as to whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing. So let's understand this. In the mind of Ted Cruz and in the mind of the other Republican candidates and the Republican establishment, people like Bill Kristol and Karl Rove who always work behind the scenes, in their mind they think Hillary Clinton is inevitable. They're 100% convinced of it. And they think that if Bernie beats her up in the primary process, that they'll have a much better chance of winning in the general election. Here's the thing. They're wrong. Now, Matthews happens to think they're right. He's afraid of, you know, Bernie Sanders being built up too much and hurting Hillary and pulling Hillary to the left. And he, in his mind, he thinks, don't go too far left, Hillary, because then you're going to get screwed in the general election. Here's what they're missing. They're comparing the experience of the Democrats to their own experience in 2008 and in 2012. With McCain, what happened? He had to run to the right because everybody who was running against him are fucking idiots. Mitt Romney, same thing. He had to run to the right because he had to deal with people like fucking Rick Santorum. You're gonna debate against Rick Santorum and win in a Republican primary without trying to be like as conservative as he is? You got a very conservative base there, so you say things that you end up having to regret later on. Like one of the times Romney ran, he said, "We ought to double Guantanamo Bay." That's shit you can only say in a Republican primary. In the general election, you say that and you lose. So they run too far to the right, and then they have to run to the center for the general election. So they think, as they're projecting onto the Democrats, ooh, build up Bernie, because that means Hillary will run too far to the left, and then she'll have to run back to the center during the election. That's what's going on in their mind, but the reality is what? The far right have unpopular ideas that are abysmal, but the so-called far left is right in the mainstream of American opinion. So they don't even realize it, but the further left Hillary Clinton goes and the further left Bernie Sanders goes, the more popular they become, because the American people are actually progressive on the issues according to the polling data. See, that's what they're missing, man. They think they came up with this absolutely genius idea. They're like, ooh, build up Bernie Sanders because then we'll win. Oh, iceberg dead ahead, bitch. You want to build up Bernie Sanders? You want to help build up Bernie Sanders? And you think he's not going to come in and wreck you? But he's going to do exactly that. He's going to – see, the thing is, Bernie Sanders' biggest hurdle to get over is the primary. That's where his real race is. Because you put him in a general election with one of the Republicans, he will run roughshod over the Republicans. And I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that if Bernie were to get through the primary somehow, he could win a general. The general is not going to be the biggest problem for Bernie Sanders. The problem is the primary process and Hillary Clinton standing in his way and big money standing in his way, because big money is going to go to Hillary Clinton. So they don't realize, man, they're fucking themselves. And by the way, so many corporatist Democrats and centrist Democrats have bought into this theory, and as a result of it, to the Republican theory, and as a result of it, they're saying, oh my God, pay no attention to Bernie Sanders. They're saying, oh, run into Hillary's arms and support Hillary more, because the Republicans want to build up Bernie Sanders because they think it'll help them. But like I said, it's not going to help them. It's not going to help them. So to all the centrist Democrats and all the corporatist Democrats, what I would say is you don't realize the Republicans are so stupid they're actually helping you. It turns out that this prediction that they're making is just as bad as every other prediction that they've ever fucking made. So for example, you got people like Bill Kristol support this theory, support doing this. Bill Kristol, look at his predictions on Iraq. Every single fucking one was dead wrong. We'll be greeted as liberators. The oil will pay for the war. We'll be in and out in a couple months. All the neocon idiots who were dead wrong about everything in their entire lives are now the people saying, hey, it's good to build up Bernie Sanders because that'll hurt Hillary Clinton and then we'll have a better chance of winning in the general election. No, that's not true, big guy. So Bernie keeps doing what he's doing. Let's say Hillary goes to the left. Now, again, it's not a foregone conclusion that Hillary's going to win. So, but either way, whether Hillary Clinton gets through or Bernie Sanders gets through or it's anybody else, the further left the Democrats go, the better a chance they have of winning, because again, the polling data shows the American people are actually with the so-called far left in America, because the so-called far left in America is actually relatively centrist all around the world. That's what Bernie Sanders represents, international centrism. See, the Republicans don't get it. You're the extreme ones. The Democrats are not extreme. So when you say, oh, you run to the far left, it'll hurt you. No, it won't. It'll make them more popular. I love that the Republicans are embracing this idea, which is only going to hurt them. So I welcome you, man. Keep building up Bernie Sanders. And by the way, another good side effect of this is what? There are some really, you know, deep conservatives who kind of are fucking, you know, really disillusioned with the establishment, really disillusioned with the Republican Party. And you get voices from all across the political spectrum building up somebody like Bernie Sanders, and then they listen to Bernie Sanders, and he always talks about the bankers and how they're robbing you, and they're robbing you, and they're robbing you. You think he's not going to get some crossover voters? keep building him up. I love it. Okay. Take a break when we come back. The terror attack, we'll get into that. And also, we have, really is actually a really serious show today. We got the government hiding information about Guantanamo, and we're going to get to this story today for sure. Saudi Arabia really looking into this whole getting a bomb thing. All right, stay right there, guys. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back. Okay. Let's get serious here. There was yet another shooting slash terror attack yesterday. I'll get to what we call it specifically in a little bit, or I'll get to my feeling as to being confused about what to call it in a little bit. So 59-year-old John Russell Hauser, or as he sometimes called himself, Rusty Hauser, killed 2 people and wounded 11 people inside of a Lafayette, Louisiana movie theater before killing himself. The victims ranged in age from their teens to their 60s. He had one gun on him for the attack, and it happened during the Amy Schumer movie. Now, Amy Schumer actually released a statement, or I think just tweeted about it and said how heartbroken she was that something like this happened at her movie. Now, his profile is the exact profile that should have been a red flag. So first, let's go to his documented history of mental illness. Quote, Hauser has a history of mental health issues, i.e. manic depression or bipolar disorder, according to court documents. The filings say that Hauser's wife, Kelly Maddox Hauser, had become so worried about his volatile mental state that she has removed all guns and or weapons from their marital residence, and she filed for divorce in March. She had a temporary protective order in 2008 against him. Court documents seeking the order said John Hauser exhibited extreme erratic behavior and has made ominous as well as disturbing statements. The court documents said even though he lived in Phoenix City, Alabama, he had come to Carroll County, Georgia, where they lived, and perpetrated various acts of family violence. Okay, so that's one thing here that establishes motive to a certain extent. Mental illness, pretty straightforward. Documented history, so that certainly plays a part here. But also, what do we have? Politics, hence the confusion as to whether it's a shooting or a terrorist attack. Let me give you details on that. Quote, a debate politics page registered to Rusty Hauser lists his political viewings as very conservative. Among his interests, Hauser lists the Greek Nationalist Party, Golden Dawn. Oh boy. So for those of you who don't know, Golden Dawn is openly a neo-Nazi party. In fact, their symbol looks like the swastika. So they're open about the fact that they're neo-Nazis, and they're open about the fact that they're uber far right, and they're also terrorists. I mean, let's call it what it is. There's been a slew of attacks there done by the Golden Dawn Party. So he loved those guys. Another tremendous red flag. So let me give you some of his statements online. Quote, type in white power groups and you get magazine articles about their never-ending claims of racism and no information of how to find white power groups you might want to join. So this guy was looking up online how to join white power groups. And again, to show you his intelligence, he wasn't able to figure it out. In fact, he lays that out in more details later. Let me give you another one. The more hardworking people with family values we have, the better. What we need to worry about is those who will not work and have no concept of family. They may largely be identified by race also. So some more overt racism, saying I want to join a white supremacy group. Hey, I love Greek neo-Nazis. And, you know, those blacks, they don't like to work. They do crime. Oh, the disastrous irony of that. Look at all these violent, lazy blacks. And then he goes and kills a bunch of people. So here's what's for sure. Given the history of mental illness and political extremism, if this was a Muslim, what would the media immediately say? There wouldn't be a debate. There wouldn't be an open question. They would say, terrorism, 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 terrorism. And of course, be fair, they would be wrong in that case. If they came out, if all these facts were the same except it was a Muslim instead of a white supremacist, they would say, terrorism, terrorism, 100%. But they would be wrong in jumping to that conclusion because it is slightly more mixed because we don't know if it was actually, if the attacks were done in the name of the ideology. And by the way, I still don't know at this point as to the race of the victims. So we need to be better than the mainstream media would be here and be as objective as possible. So in the case of Dylann Roof, I was one of the first to come out and say 100% terrorism, no question about it, after we got all the evidence. Loves Rhodesia, loves apartheid South Africa, wants a new Confederacy, openly wrote racist blogs, took all the pictures with a Confederate flag. In Dylann Roof's case, 100% terrorism. He was a little crazy at the beginning, but that led him into being radicalized by an ideology, and he attacked in the name of his ideology. That's terrorism. You could, by the way, you could say the same for Muhammad Abdulaziz. So he was a little off his rocker. He's a little crazy because he's down on his luck, and then he turned to radical Islam and did attacks in the name of radical Islam. Again, that's terrorism as well. Now, funny enough, the government says no, only one is terrorism because only one's a Muslim. They don't say the last part, but that's really what's going on here because they don't categorize what Dylann Roof did as terrorism. It's a hate crime. It's a step below terrorism because he's white. Again, they don't say that, but that's the reality. So we were the first to come out and say Dylann Roof is terrorism, Abdulaziz is terrorism. This one, we are going to have to wait to get more information because it can be that he has all these extremist political opinions, but the attack specifically was not done in the name of those beliefs. In the case of Dylann Roof, it was. It was clear. In the case of Abdulaziz, it was. It was clear. This is a case where it's like 50-50. He happens to have a documented history of mental illness, and he's snapped before in the past, and that's we know that. But he also has these extreme political. So I'd go as far as to say, it could be. It depends on, honestly, the victims and further evidence. So if people in the theater say, you know, he got up and said, these N-words are taking over, and he starts shooting, well, that's terrorism. Because he's killing for his political belief. But if he just kind of snapped, went crazy further, and just killed everybody, that's slightly different. That would be more of a mass shooting. But either way, nobody comes back from the dead here. And the root of the problem is what? So we can have a discussion, and I do think it's up in the air as to whether it's terrorism or a mass shooting right now. But the root of the problem is what? Easily accessible weapons. So I've never seen a more prime candidate for somebody who should not have a firearm. We have somebody here who's, it's documented that he has serious mental issues. It's documented that he has a criminal history. He's had, you know, complaints filed against him and things of that nature. And there's all the writings out there on the internet that say, I'm looking to join a white supremacy group. I love neo-Nazis. The blacks are the problem. I mean, I've never seen a more clear example for if this guy were to go and buy a gun, a simple, good, real background check, anybody would say, okay, I can't sell you a gun. I just can't. It would be illegal for me to sell you a gun, or it should be because of how off your rocker you are. Okay, and then I know this is where people fire back and they say, yeah, but then he'll just go buy it on the black market or he'll find some way to get his hands on it. And understand, it's not like doing sane gun reform is something that's 100% foolproof. But the point is that you want to make it harder for guys like this to get a gun. And by the way, it would reflect in the statistics. So if you make it harder for this guy to get a gun because you have a good background check and good rules associated with it, well, then you're going to have a lot less of these scenarios. You're going to have a lot less of these mass killings. I mean, as of right now, every year in America, 32,000 people die on average because of gun violence in America. That includes everything. So that's homicides, suicides, accidents. That's everything. But just because we have guns all over the place, there are 32,000 deaths. Now, if you do a rigid background check, 100% across the board, no gun show loophole, none of that horse shit, and you say, okay, if you have severe depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, go down the list. If you're attached to any extremist political ideologies, you're part of a white supremacist group, things like that. If we stop those people from getting guns and we limit the number of guns in circulation by doing that, you don't think the gun death statistics will go down? And yesterday, I see on Twitter some idiots like, gun control wouldn't help because then you just would have stabbed people instead. Would have been a stabbing death. Okay. Think about how incomprehensibly stupid that is. There are 32,000 gun deaths in America every single year on average. 32,000. And the guy in the tweet referenced the United Kingdom. He's like, you'd just be stabbed there. Okay, but are there 32,000 stab deaths there? Or actually, be kind here. whatever the equivalent percentage of the population there would be. So we have a little over 300 million people here, and 32,000 die every year because of gun violence. I don't know what the population is of Britain, but if the equivalent percent is the equivalent percentage over there of 32,000, is that are they all dying from stab wounds? No, they're not, because it turns out some weapons are easier to kill people with than others. And again, I'm not somebody who goes full European style, or some places in Europe, I should say. I'm not somebody who goes full Japan style where they just flat out ban guns. I understand the culture, if you will, is a little different here in the U.S. People in the Midwest and the South hunt all the time, and they get food that way oftentimes. I mean, I understand different people have different needs in life, and, you know, some people need guns more, and I'm not going to stop law-abiding citizens from owning guns, and I'm not going to do this broad rule that affects everybody in, you know, who uses it differently in a negative way. So that's not the point here. The point is to try to limit, you know, the worst people in society from getting their hands on the guns. And so we try to chip away at statistics like this and chip away at the numbers of mass shootings. So I'm not an extremist on this issue. I'm a moderate on this issue. But you still have people that come out and say, no regulation at all, because something. I mean, it's just, it's not true that you're safer when there's more guns. If that were the case, the U.S. would be the safest modern nation out there. We're not. We're the least safe. So on that fact alone, your argument is done, son. Some people go, oh, well, look at fucking Chicago. They got strict gun laws, and they have a high murder rate. Why is that? Because every area surrounding Chicago has lax gun laws, so people from Chicago go outside of Chicago, get the guns, and then bring them back into Chicago. The problem isn't that Chicago has lax gun laws, strict gun laws. The problem is that every area around it has lax gun laws, gave people when you talk about this. But look, we know what the solution is, or we know what would help to bring down the gun death statistics in America. But we don't want to do it. We don't have the political will to do it. And we have nobody to blame but ourselves for that. Okay. Next. All right, one more on this issue, and then we will – I was going to say we'll bring the mood up, but we're not, because after this we got something else that's super serious. Obama spoke to the BBC about his biggest regret thus far in office, and his answer is really ominous here, because what happened a few hours later after he did this? Take a look.
If you ask me where has been – The one area where I feel that I've been most frustrated and most stymied, it is the fact that the United States of America is the one advanced nation on Earth in which we do not have sufficient common sense gun safety laws, even in the face of repeated mass killings. And, you know, if you look at the number of Americans killed since 9/11 by terrorism, it's less than 100. If you look at the number that have been killed by gun violence, it's in the tens of thousands. And for us not to be able to resolve that issue has been something that is distressing, but it is not something that I intend to stop working on in the remaining 18 months.
Just a little bit after that interview, there was another mass shooting. It's the mass shooting in Louisiana at the movie theater. That's crazy, man. Sometimes I feel like we live in a movie. This is the Twilight Zone or some shit. He's right. You heard him lay it out there. His numbers aren't wrong. In fact, if anything, he underrepresented the reality. If he gave the real numbers, his point would have been even stronger. So, in fact, let me do that. Let me give you the real numbers. We did this a few weeks ago, and I want to refresh your memory to show you the insane system we still have here in the United States of America. So, gun deaths just since Newtown. So December 2012. How many gun deaths have there been? You ready for this? 89,127. Now, that actually, that number is actually less than what it really is, because all I did was took the number from my video from a few weeks ago, so this has increased probably to about 89,400 or so, which is crazy to say, but it's true. So keep that in mind, and also keep in mind this is everything, all gun deaths. So it includes homicides, suicides, accidents, you name it. It's just people who have died because of guns. I think murders per year is, depending on the year, is about 9,000, which is such a fucking high number. And total gun deaths per year is about 32,000, but it just so happens since Newtown, according to the best CDC estimates, 89,127 people have died in America simply because we have so many guns in circulation. So again, to put that in perspective, I need to keep reminding you this. Let's talk about casualties on the American side in different wars historically. So during the Korean War, 54,246 Americans died. So there's been more than a Korean War in America since Sandy Hook because of our lax gun laws. How about the Revolutionary War? 25,000 people died in the Revolutionary War. So more than three times. We've had more than three Revolutionary Wars. Isn't that incredible? What an amazing fact. Just from December 2012 until today in America, we've had more than three times the casualty rate of the Revolutionary War. Isn't that ridiculous? Okay, the War on Terror. On the American side, 6,717 people died. 6,717. 89,127 Americans have died since Newtown in America, simply because of our lax gun laws. And finally, this one is the one that blows everybody's mind the most. I mean, I'm sure your mind is already blown, given these facts. If it's not, the fuck is wrong with you? But 58,209 people died on the American side in Vietnam. The war which everybody looks at, oh my God, super high casualty rate. What a crazy war that was. We've had way more than a Vietnam just here at home since December 2012, since Newtown. I feel like it was just yesterday. Fucking Newtown feels so recently. And then 89,127 people, a little more than that, have died from guns since that. I keep repeating myself, but I keep repeating myself because I'm trying to get it through my own fucking head because the numbers are so ridiculous. And then people, you know, they want you to get scared over the boogeyman, over things that are not a direct threat to you in Arkansas. Okay, so you turn on the TV at night, what will they tell? Iran nuclear weapon, which they don't have, by the way. They have no plans of making it, and we just made a deal so they don't get it. But Iran nuclear weapon, be afraid. Scary music. Muslim guy praying. Look at the picture. Be afraid. ISIS, oh my God, be afraid of ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. Now, this isn't to say, I'm not trying to downplay the threat of ISIS. I'm just trying to say, you don't live in Fallujah. You don't live in Mosul. You don't live in Anbar province. Okay, you're not in Syria right now. Are you, if you're a Shia fighting on the side of Assad, you should fear ISIS more than gun deaths in America because you're not in America. But in terms of what you should fear here at home, we know what it is. You should fear the fact that there's over 300 million guns in circulation, and every single crazy motherfucker and every single white supremacist and far-right terrorist is armed to the teeth. Okay, that's what you should be afraid of, but you're not afraid of that. You're not afraid of that because the media misleads the fuck out of you, man. I mean, now the only time a shooting even makes the news is if it's, you know, if it reaches a certain bar. So in this case, okay, we have two people dead. It was at a movie theater, and we have 11 people injured. Okay, we can cover this one. But there was, I mean, for example, the other day I stumbled across a story, and I'm guilty of glossing over it too. I stumbled across a story, three people were killed. I only saw one of the 10 or 15 sites I go to cover it. Three people were killed, but it was like a family affair. So, you know, people thought, well, it's not random, senseless acts of violence, so I guess we don't cover this one. That's lunacy! Like, I don't cover it because there was a reason for it that was different than just random violence, so we can't fearmonger over it as much, so let's just not cover it much. That's how we think, man. We're not objective about what's actually a problem. And again, for the 912th time, I'm not somebody who's saying, hey, let's ban all guns, nor do I think we can. But what I am saying is, why not have a universal background check? Why not stop paranoid schizophrenics and stop severely depressed people and stop people with criminal records from getting guns? Why not try to make it harder for some of these people to get weapons? I don't know why we wouldn't do that. And I also don't know why we would allow assault weapons to be in circulation. I don't know why we would allow high-capacity magazines to be in circulation. All these, why not do more gun buyback programs? All of these things would definitely chip away at these statistics. 89,000 people! 89,000 people dead just since Newtown because of guns in America. And you're not nearly as scared of that. You want to run into the arms of the problem, or you want more guns, so you want to exacerbate the problem, and you think that's going to keep you safe. But you're scared of Iran and their non-existent nuclear weapons. We're not objective, and we're not smart in how we fight back and try to fix these problems. And the final thing is, Obama's saying this stuff, but I'm mad at Obama. You want to know why I'm mad at Obama? Because he buckled. You know, look, he's on the right side. His heart's on the right side when it comes to doing some sane, moderate gun reforms. He is. He's on the right side. But, they just proposed a bill, you know, the Republicans blocked it. The Democrats proposed it. It was the watered-down background check bill. Mitch McConnell filibustered it. Why? Because he takes money from the NRA and the gun manufacturers, and they said, hey, you kill that thing. But it was a bill that over 90% of the American people supported, and he killed it. And what did the Democrats do? When the Republicans blocked a bill with 90% favorability, did they bring it back up? Did they try to pass it 2 times, 3 times, 10 times? No. Why is it the Republicans can try to repeal Obamacare 51 times, and they don't blink, and they just think this is what we do, but the Democrats can only try to do gun reform once, and if it gets crushed, we're so scared. And none of them made it a campaign issue. None of them made it a campaign issue when over 90% of the population is with you. Why would you not crush them with that in the campaign and say, these guys are fucking fascists? They looked at over 90% of the American people on the other side of the issue. They said, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care about what 90% of the American people think. So there's blame to go around everywhere over this. And my point to Obama is, if you want to fucking get it done, then fucking get it done. Okay? Get all your Democrats together, whether it's in the House, whether it's in the Senate. You bring them all together and you tell them how you win in the battle of ideas and how you win marketing to the American people and making your case using the media. Go on talk shows. Talk about it. Call the Republicans bad names, because guess what? They are bad people for what they blocked. So you force them to say yes. That's what you do. Okay. I got to take a break, but when we come back, I got a bunch of great stuff. A bunch of great stuff, but it is still pretty sad. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Be the same. Girl, you
Bye, guys.
That's how I let everybody know I'm about to do a good story. The federal government gave the oldest and the weakest argument this week for not releasing more pictures and videos and information on Guantanamo Bay. Ryan J. Riley from Huffington Post reports on this. He says, quote, "The Obama administration said this week that secret videos depicting how the U.S. government treated Guantanamo detainees would make excellent propaganda for Islamic State terrorists. The American public should not be allowed to see the videos," argued the government and military leaders, "because of the possibility that they could be used by Islamic extremists or upset people in the Middle East. Release of the videos would be a threat to national security," one military official claimed, "because it would inflame Muslim sensitivities and subject the U.S. government to criticism." The U.S. government might be criticized if we release the videos of them doing horrific things. I guess we have to hide it. That's what we should do. How dumb is that? Let me ask these guys a question. Should we not have released the Pentagon Papers, for example, which detailed our crimes in Vietnam, using napalm and Agent Orange on innocent villagers who ended up dying horrific deaths? Should we not release that information because, you know, we should fear some Vietnamese people getting revenge on us? Because that's the same argument they're making. That's what they're saying. You know, oh my God, you can't show the Muslim world how fucked up we were towards Muslims because then they'd be angry at us. Well, maybe you shouldn't have done those things in the first place if that's the case. Should we not release the crimes of, I don't know, let's flip the script to one of our enemies, Putin's government, because then there might be retaliatory attacks against Russians? Would you accept that reasoning, if somebody else used it? I don't think so. Should we not report any crimes committed? Should the news shut up about all crimes that are committed by any criminal? Because perhaps the victim's family members might strike back. There's the same logic going into all these different points here. And by the way, if you're so concerned that the actions we took endangered the United States of America, then why did you tell us that those actions were specifically to protect the United States of America in the first place? Notice that, man. They flipped it on its head, and they acted like none of us should point it out, that they just flipped it. The whole original point that they said we have to do torture is we got to torture because we got to protect America. Now that they torture, what are they saying? Oh, fuck, we just made the United States of America less safe. You can't release the pictures of the torture. So their whole original point, it turns out the opposite was true. It turns out you're admitting the liberals were right all along when they said you can't do torture, it'll endanger us more, and on principle, it's immoral and it's fucked up. So you're admitting the liberals were right all along. Thank you. All the far-right conservatives are now even admitting that it was wrong. So, newsflash, we also paid for what happened here. So how we're debating whether or not we should be able to see it is beyond me. We fucking paid for it. I'm a taxpayer, okay? I gave you money, you did shit in my name with my money, and then you're going, you can't see this one. Imagine that in any other context. I pay an investor, and I'm like, hey, man, what's my account at? What number is it at? I can't tell you. I'm your boss. I paid you. I paid you money, and you did shit in my name with my money. What's my account at? I gotta go. That's what the government is doing here. Why the fuck? Again, I don't understand how this is debatable. And they always say, whenever they're embarrassed, they always say, classified information, top secret. No, the whole idea of top secret information to begin with was like, hey, don't give that crazy person the nuclear launch codes. That's top secret. That makes sense to be top secret. Don't go handing out the nuclear launch codes to white supremacists in Tennessee. That makes sense. That makes sense. But outside of that, now they're just abusing the fuck out of it. Anything and everything that paints the government in even a slightly negative light, they go, classified. Don't show anybody that. And in a final twist of irony, here's one of the lines in the article. Quote, "Military officials maintain that the videos do not depict any wrongdoings and only show soldiers acting as prison guards, behaving in a lawful and humane way." So then release the tapes. What the fuck is that? They spend the first, like, 3/4 of the article saying, man, this shit is fucked up, dude. we can't release this. We'll endanger the United States. And then they say, well, the video doesn't depict any wrongdoing. It only shows soldiers being prison guards and behaving in a lawful and humane way. Totally contradict yourself. You totally contradicted yourself. I can't take it, man. The hypocrisy, the contradictions, the outright stupidity and immorality of the government. You expect us to fucking sit here and take this shit? No, see, the problem is all of you, Democrats and Republicans in the establishment, bought into the bullshit idea that we are the good people by definition. So when the good people do fucked up shit, it's not so fucked up because we meant well and we're the good people. And that's where you get to a place where you do a whole bunch of torture, you do a whole bunch of, you know, illegally detaining people, you invade random countries that didn't fucking attack us, you kill civilians, and then you say, well, God forbid we released the information, the facts of what we did, those fucking savages might retaliate. Yeah, those fucking savages. It's not that you guys are the savages. Of course not. Whew. Next. All right, we got to go to Saudi Arabia. So here we go again. Reuters is reporting today that Saudi Arabia is salivating over the idea of getting a nuclear weapon. They say, quote, one likely Saudi Arabian response to the deal with Iran has struck with world powers. Wait, what does that say? That doesn't make any sense. Let's try that again. One likely Saudi Arabian response to the deal its biggest enemy, Iran, has struck with world powers is to accelerate its own nuclear power plans, creating an atomic infrastructure it could one day seek to weaponize. They continue, but while it has recently made moves to advance its nuclear program, experts say it is uncertain whether it could realistically build an atomic bomb in secret or withstand the political pressure it would face if such plans were revealed. Saudi Arabia would try to get the bomb if Iran did, just like India and Pakistan. The Pakistanis said for years they didn't want one, but when India got it, so did they. Now, here's the thing. The misinformation is driving the Saudis here, which is profoundly unnerving, because the response of the Saudi government is basically as if all the Republican propaganda is true. So all the Republicans say, oh my God, now Iran's going to get a bomb and they're going to have it like on Thursday. That's what they're saying. And so the Saudi government's like, oh my God, okay, we need a bomb then. What the fuck's happening here? So we're having, it's like we've started a nuclear arms race based on misinformation. So propaganda's a dangerous thing, man. Because if only all of the facts were out there and believed and it wasn't countered with horseshit, well then Saudi Arabia would be more at ease right now. They'd be like, oh, God, thank God. Iran's not getting a weapon. Wonderful. But they believe the misinformation. It's like, oh, no, no, we need a nuke, too. But they don't have one. I thought they did. John Boehner said they did. Well, John Boehner's a fucking idiot. Look at him. He's a 62-year-old man that goes tanning and sucks down cigarettes for breakfast. You're going to trust this motherfucker? That's actually a low blow, kind of, because there's other reasons to dislike him, not just that. So that's the problem here, man. And the real concern isn't even their own nuclear weapons program. The real concern is the off-the-shelf nukes. Because, as a previous article explained, and we covered at the time, Pakistan, they could just go to Pakistan and say, give us a nuke. And Pakistan would be, okay. Because they helped Pakistan to get their nukes. So, I mean, it's basically, not that Saudi Arabia is a nuclear-armed state, but it's basically halfway there. Because they could just get a nuke whenever the fuck they want from Pakistan. And what's the massive hypocrisy here, of course? Where's the U.S. media? Where's President Obama? Where's the Republicans? Where's everybody in the U.S.? Everybody in the U.S. is so fucking scared. Islamic extremists! Iran, they're Islamic extremists. ISIS, they're Islamic extremists. Islamic extremists everywhere. I'm so scared. Well, Saudi Arabia is officially a Sharia state. Officially. They behead people in public squares for sorcery and atheism and all types of made-up shit. And they're telling you, yeah, we think we want one. What do you hear? Crickets. I don't hear anything. I hear fucking silence. If you guys are so concerned about Muslim fundamentalists, Islamic extremists getting a weapon, why do I not hear a peep about Saudi Arabia? I know why. Do you know why? One word. Oil. If you're our oil butt buddy, you get whatever the fuck you want. And all those principled arguments we make about, we only do business with people who believe in freedom and democracy. That's who we do business with. Unless you're Saudi Arabia, then you could have a Sharia state and it's totally cool. But other than that, to freedom and democracy. Freedom and democracy. Yeah, my ass. A regime can get away with anything it wants to get away with, as long as they're our buddy and they do business deals with us. So spare me your fake principled garbage. And it was never the case with Iran either that you were concerned because they're Islamic extremists. Nonsense. Because Saudi Arabia, their government is more fundamentalist and more extreme. They're fundamentalist Sunnis compared to the Shia state in Iran. And actually the population of Iran is relatively secular compared to other nations in the region. So it was never about, oh my God, Islamic extremism, terrorism. It's all about geopolitics and the business deals that you want to cut. If you really are concerned about dangerous people getting their hands on nuclear weapons, enemy number one should be your butt buddy, Saudi Arabia. Okay. Moving along. Back to Ted Cruz. Motherfucker. I don't want to talk about this guy again. I got a clip in here somewhere. Okay, there we go. So Ted Cruz flubbed his impromptu debate with Code Pink on Thursday. Some protesters challenged him and baited him into saying some dumb shit, which apparently is not very difficult when you're dealing with Ted Cruz. So here's what he said. Quote, let's have some dialogue. I'm doing his voice. Let's have some dialogue. So one of the things you said is, if Iran is trying to... I'm Ted Cruz, Okay, he didn't say that part. If Iran is trying to get nuclear weapons, well, the nice thing is, I believe truth matters. You know, one entity, one person with whom there is no ambiguity in terms of whether Iran wants a nuclear weapon is the Ayatollah, is President Hassan Rouhani, both of whom explicitly said they are developing nuclear weapons. There is no doubt about it. Okay, again, he didn't say me, but he may as well have, because he said everything else, and he said it very similar to the voice I used. So Medea Benjamin, who is the founder of Code Pink, responded. I like her response because this is totally secular talk style. This is exactly how I would respond. She said, quote, that is absolutely false. That's it. That's all she said. And the crowd, of course, being a Ted Cruz crowd, what did they do? They threw their feces and went, okay, not really, but they did boo and they did jeer. And somebody shouted, I love the stupidity of this comment. Somebody shouted, do you know Farsi? I got her, right? Did I get her, guys? Oh, you done got her, man. You done got her. Where's my Confederate flag? Right, because there's nobody in the world who's ever translated Farsi so that Medea Benjamin can understand it. She needs to understand Farsi in order to get what the Ayatollah is saying or what Hassan Rouhani is saying, right? So I take it you already know that Ted Cruz knows Farsi. You're defending Ted Cruz. He says, I know what these guys said in Iran. Did you say to Ted Cruz? Yeah, do you know Farsi, asshole? No, of course you didn't say that. Because it's your buddy. Oh, my God, they're just so stupid. They're just so stupid. Every comment they make where they think they're making an argument, you could drive fucking Mack trucks through the gaping holes in their arguments. Okay, so, the facts. You ready for the facts? Let's get to the bottom of this here. Reuters reported, because apparently they have somebody that can, take Farsi and put it into English. Oh, crazy. I didn't know translation was possible. Reuters reported that the Ayatollah said the following. Now, remember, the Ayatollah is a dick. I'm the first to admit that. He's an asshole. Everybody knows that. But even with that being the case, the asshole over there said, quote, the Americans say they stopped Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. They know it's not true. Oh, my God, is Ted Cruz right? Is he about to say that they developed a nuclear weapon or they're going to? They continue. We had a fatwa declaring nuclear weapons to be religiously forbidden under Islamic law. It had nothing to do with nuclear talks. You say the exact opposite. You're like, oh, you stupid Americans think they just made a good deal. We weren't going to build a nuke anyway. Assholes. oh, wait, but it gets better. So it's clear what he's saying, and it's clear Ted Cruz is wrong. But if that wasn't direct enough for you, he also referenced not just the Ayatollah. He referenced Hassan Rouhani. He said, Hassan Rouhani made it clear. Me, I'm Ted Cruz. Me. Hassan Rouhani made it clear that Iran wants a nuclear weapon and they're going to get it. That's what Hassan Rouhani said. Really? Let's take a look.
We have never pursued or sought a nuclear bomb, and we are not going to do so. We are solely seeking peaceful nuclear technology.
Can you say that Iran will not build a nuclear weapon under any circumstances whatsoever?
The answer to this question is quite obvious. We have time and again said that under no circumstances would we seek any weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. Nor will we ever.
Has Ted Cruz ever been right about anything? Is it the exact opposite of what Ted Cruz said? The exact opposite. Now, understand, it's a fair point to say, I don't believe them. You can make that argument, okay? But that's not the argument Ted Cruz made. He didn't say, hey, they said that they weren't going to make a bomb, but I don't believe them. He said, they said they're going to make a bomb. And that's not what they said. And by the way, you don't even need to believe them. You don't need to trust them because the deal is not based on trust. It's based on verification. That's why the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, gets to monitor the sites and gets to check them virtually whenever they want. So they do regular checks, which they don't need approval for, and if they want to do a special check because they think something is up, all they have to do is get approval from an international commission, which is made up of countries that are more kind to the U.S., who will greenlight any check anyway. So it's not like this isn't like a nuanced thing, and the deal isn't a nuanced thing and a complex thing where you can discuss the, you know, all the aspects of it. Of course it is. But Ted Cruz glossed over all the shades of gray because he never sees shades of gray. He's fucking Ted Cruz. And he said, they said they want a nuclear weapon. I know, I heard it. It's the exact opposite, you lying bitch. Okay. Next. All right, we got to get to the character assassination. Sandra Bland, of course. Everybody knew this was coming. Everybody knew this was coming. Right on time, here comes the character assassination of Sandra Bland. Sandra Bland, of course, is the woman who was pulled over in Texas for not using her blinker while she was switching lanes. She was arrested after a confrontation with an officer, and now she's dead. They say she committed suicide. That's really an open question. It's up in the air. It appears to be a rather outlandish claim. And also, by the way, being pulled over for not putting on her blinker, what people fail to mention is that the reason she switched lanes without putting on her blinker is that the cop was tailgating her and she moved over so the cop can go by. And then when the cop got out of the car and went up to the window, she was like, what the? She didn't even realize she was getting pulled over. She thought she was being nice by getting to the side to let him go by. So she did the initial move because the cop was there, up her ass. That's why she did it. But they make him, oh, breaking the law, switching lanes without putting on a blinker. Aha. This whole story is so frustrating because there should have never been a confrontation in the first place. She should have never been pulled over in the first place. You know, you're allowed to, as a police officer, say, okay, switching lanes without a blinker, nobody's fucking around. Nobody was on the road. Nobody's on the road. It was just him and her. And she's like, okay, he's up my ass. I'll move. It started the chain of events that led to her dying. Okay, but let's put that aside because Raw Story reports something very important today. They say, quote, Sandra Bland, the black woman found hanging dead in a Texas jail days after a traffic stop, smoked or possibly swallowed a large amount of marijuana while in custody. What? Waller County District Attorney Elton Mathis made the disclosure in a text message to Sandra's attorney, who called the state's autopsy defective. Now, look at how they worded. Quote, the autopsy results in toxicology. It appears she swallowed a large quantity of marijuana or smoked it in the jail. In the jail. In the jail. She was smoking weed in a jail cell. Or she was She ingested marijuana in a jail cell, like she ate an edible or something like that. That's your story. You're sticking to that story. You're sticking to that story. I cannot describe to you the extent to which I do not believe this story. I'm not even 1% believing this story. You want to know why that's the case? We saw the confrontation between her and the cop. We saw the way everything unfolded. Is anybody really stupid enough to believe that at some point that officer did not pat her down and check what's in her pockets and didn't have to put her belongings somewhere before she was put into a jail cell? He just somehow magically missed that she had marijuana to smoke on her in a jail cell or eat. No. A character assassination 101. Now, I got more news on that. So a law enforcement official said that she admitted that, hey, I tried suicide once. Come again? So let me get this straight. According to them, you have Sandra Bland, who said to somebody who she doesn't know in the jail, after she clearly is not very fond of people who are in law enforcement at that point in time, she says to them, hey, man, just a heads up. I tried suicide once. Now, you're saying, well, Kyle, how can you know the specifics? How can you know the details? It's not like anything contradicts what she's saying. You're just getting one side of the story here. Actually, on her jail form, when she was brought there, when she was asked that question on the form, are you suicidal right now? She checked no. Who am I going to believe? No. This is such a clear example, man. Character assassination 101. And I told you guys, there were articles that broke the day after this story broke that said that the head of law enforcement in the place where she was arrested, he had a history of racial issues. And then they said, oh, we have somebody who's going to, you know, make sure there was no foul play. That guy also had racial issues. No, you can't tell me. I'm at the point where, you know, I'm looking at this situation now. The more it unfolds, the more I see it as like a fucking early 1900s style, you know, eyebrow raising, possibly lynching type thing. Okay, now the only reason I'm not saying 100% is because we don't have proof that guarantees that, but what I do know is you can poke gigantic holes in the argument made by the law enforcement officials in this place in Texas. I should also note, somebody on Twitter reached out to me, a longtime listener of the show, told me that, hey, I grew up like, you know, very close to there. I could tell you that town, rampant racism. Rampant. So I saw the video. I know who I think is at fault. It was clear to me the officer escalated the situation when he didn't have to. He saw that somebody, that she was upset she was getting a ticket. Oh, how outrageous. How outlandish. And what did the officer do? Escalated. Put out your cigarette, ma'am. She's like, this is my property. I don't have to. Give me the ticket. I'll go on my way. Get out of the car. All the officer had to do was just be a trained professional and say, okay, here's the ticket, have a nice day, goodbye, and everything would have been fine. No, escalated the situation. Ended up with her dead. I don't believe you, law enforcement. Okay, try harder. And nobody even mentions the second half of this. I don't believe that she took the marijuana. Okay, I don't believe that. But even if she did, and 100% it didn't happen in jail, let's say she took it 15 days earlier that day or whatever the case, nobody says, hey, wait a second, the effects marijuana has on you, it's not like alcohol. There's a reason why you drive by a bar at 3 o'clock in the morning, a lot of people are fighting. Because alcohol is a drug that affects you in a certain way. You're more aggressive. Marijuana is not that drug. Marijuana, what you want to do, the old stereotype is what? You want to eat some Cheetos, eat some cookie dough ice cream, and fall asleep while watching reruns of Gilligan's Island. You're not going to have people fucking getting angry and loud with each other when they're high on weed. So nobody even says the follow-up to this, even if this is true, which is, oh, it's true? You just hurt your case even more, Mr. Officer. Because that's like saying, it's very similar to saying, this person was, you know, very obnoxious and out of bounds and very aggressive. They were on Valium. But wait, Valium brings you down, not up. Nobody says that. See, that's the thing. We have a puritanical mindset when it comes to drugs in America. So you just hear drugs, you go, oh, bad person. Maybe they had it coming. That's the gut reaction. But the reality is drugs are different. They affect your conscience differently. So if somebody smokes marijuana or somebody takes a Xanax, that person is going to be much lower than if somebody did some cocaine or methamphetamine. Drugs are different, guys. But, of course, no, all the nuances out the window, all the complexities out the window, because the law enforcement officials want to shove the propaganda down our throats and make you believe that she had it coming. I saw the video. She didn't have it coming. You're the fucking criminals. Okay, next. Let's go to Pat Robertson. Right Wing Watch got a clip from the Pat Robertson show that's so ridiculous that it looks like something out of The Onion. So he's going to talk about Obama's trip to Africa here, and he'll give you a little dose of racism at the end, and he'll mix it in with a heaping dose of homophobia.
Barack Obama has an agenda against God. That's what a Christian leader in Kenya says.
Must be right.
The president travels there for an economic summit. Christians in Kenya don't want the president pushing his belief on gay rights.
The family is the strength of a nation. If the family is destroyed, then the nation is destroyed.
Right.
So we don't want to open doors for a nation to be destroyed.
Pro-family activists took to the streets of Nairobi this month, urging the president to avoid the subject when he visits.
Since Obama has a Kenyan descent, I think he should be more familiar with our country.
Homosexuality is illegal in Kenya and 37 other African countries. In fact, Kenya's penal code says any individual who has carnal knowledge of any person against the order of nature can face 14 years jail time.
That's
Bishop
fair.
Kariuki says he'll fight to keep homosexuality a crime in Kenya.
Because it is an abomination to God.
Top Kenyan politicians are also weighing in. The country's deputy president is quoted saying, God did not create man and woman so that men would marry men and women marry women.
Deep.
Another lawmaker warned, we shall tell him to shut up and go home if he talked about gay rights. After last month's U.S. Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage in America, one politician here said allowing such a thing in her country would open, quote, floodgates of evil synonymous with the biblical Sodom and Gomorrah.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Bishop Kariuki says the president is destroying America with his support for gay marriage.
I believe that with all my heart. With that agenda, he's ruining America because America has been known as a Christian nation.
No,
it has been known as a nation that has sent missionaries out. Now it is a different nation altogether because it's an agenda against God.
George Thomas, CBN News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Boy, those Africans have got it right. One wishes that the President of the United States would listen to some of his fellows, Africans, cousins, and what they have to say because they speak truth and they speak wisdom.
Oh, God. Oh, that was amazing. One wishes President Obama would listen to his fellows in Africa. I mean, his fellow African cousins. Brother, something. He's black! He's black, goddammit! Oh, Pat, you're too obvious. Okay. President Obama was not born in Africa, you fuckhead. He was born in Hawaii. Let's get that through your head. I know the birtherism issue is still somewhere back there in his mind somewhere. He's got to get through all the Percocet and all the anti-inflammatory pills to get to it. But a birther! He's black, goddammit, he's black! And then wisdom. Truth and wisdom in Kenya. Did you hear the shit they were saying? No, this is going to make me sound like an asshole, but the governments that they have set up, the 37 governments, whatever it is in Africa, that are, you know, advocating that homosexuality should be put in jail. In some places, they give you the death penalty for it. That is a primitive system. And what's so ironic is that they look at the U.S. like, we're the primitive one. Like, giving people equal rights, assholes. No, you're the ones with the problem. Because I love how you heard their reasoning, too. The guy said it. It's an abomination in the eyes of God. That's your reasoning? God! Fuck gays. Am I clear enough? That's scientific, right? Do we all agree here? Come on, man. You're going to treat people on this earth like shit. You're going to give them no rights. You're going to throw them in jail. You're going to beat them in some circumstances. Some nations kill them. All based on what you think God is saying when you know damn well and I know damn well your punk ass has never had a conversation with the Almighty. You've never heard the Almighty say anything because if you did, you'd be in a fucking mental hospital on antipsychotic drugs. So you're just guessing. You're rolling the dice. Okay, guys, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, or Christianity? Let's go. Roll the dice. I'm a Christian. Christianity must be true. But it's not true. There's no evidence for it. There's no facts to back it up. It is a faith system, not fact. So you take something on faith, and then you're willing to oppress an entire group of people as a result of that. And I love this. How ironic is it that's happening in Africa? Africa historically has been exploited to no end by imperialist powers. But when they get the opportunity, they're like, okay, now it's our turn to exploit people. Can we oppress people? We've been oppressed for so long that we want to oppress people even lower than us. Gays, get in line. Where are you? Trans people? Fuck you. Let's put them in jail. You should fucking know better than that, man. Ridiculous. And there was a story the other day. They said there was going to be a naked protest. Everybody's going to get naked and be like, we hate gays when Obama shows up, and just be naked. That'd be the most ironic protest ever. You and a bunch of dudes naked. Like, I hate gays, which is why I'm looking at Dave's dick. Sure you hate gays? Looks like you want to participate in it. But I thought it was a fake story when I saw it. Turns out, we learned today, likely is a fake story. Or at the very least, they said it was canceled. So we see what's really going on there. But Obama, you're 100% right. Everybody else is 100% wrong. And Pat Robertson, there you saw it. Little dose of racism still left in him, and he also has quite a bit of homophobia, because he called it wisdom that a guy said, it is an abomination in the eyes of God, so put gays in jail. Thank you for letting us know, Pat, what you really want to do here in America. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. God, I had so many fucking stories left to get to also. Can't do it. All right. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Same time, same place. Later.